This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Drean.
All right, Producers Podcast. Hello. This is the second time I'm doing my intro. The first time, I'll be honest, I'm almost always have noise or TV or something going in the background. I don't know if you're like me. Some people that produce audio just want to know, they don't want any distractions. They want to be plugged into what they're doing, and that's probably the more professional way to do it. But whenever I'm working on stuff, I always have something else going. So I'm constantly, pausing a radio stream and then pausing it back, when I'm unvoicing and voicing. Anyway, right now I had the Alpha 8 poker show on Fox Sports 1. Here's the advantage if you're into poker. I like the idea of these monster buy-in tournaments, these mega buy-in tournaments, and you see a level of play. You don't really have to sift through play of, idiots to see all high-level, top-skill play, so that's cool. It's on Fox Sports 1, who seems to respect their programming a lot more than, what is the other one? The World Poker Tour is on, I think, Fox Sports Net, so it's all the local one. Anyway, that one is almost impossible to watch because I don't watch it live. I don't know who watches television exactly live anymore. They preempt it all the time. If it says it's going to be on at 8, it's not. Or sometimes I'll turn it on, it's the end of a game, and I'll see like the last 12 minutes. It just gets upsetting, If you're going to be preempting it, then at least, put it on at midnight or 1 in the morning, because I'm going to record it anyway. So, whatever. Alpha 8, they seem to respect the programming on the network a little better, and if stuff says it's going to come on at 8 or 9 or 10, it comes on at 8 or 9 or 10. So I like, as far as poker broadcasts go, I like what they're doing with that, if you're interested. You haven't checked it out yet, Alpha 8. What I don't like is I just looked up, and I've just paused it by accident. And no, and I will preempt and say not that there's anything wrong with this, but I've got a picture of Antonio Esfandiari grabbing his junk through what are essentially European Speedos out on the beach, and to me, that's not a poker broadcast. All right there. I don't know why it paused specifically at that moment, but it did, and so now I'll move on with my intro. I got two main things to talk about before we get into the Jeff Lawrence interview. I'm not going to say a lot about Jeff Lawrence before we dive in because there's not too much I need to say. He's an amazing voice talent, radio, imaging, television. I'm just all over the place. I won't say it now, though. I think it's pretty, he's put it out there on his Facebook and whatnot, but he is the voice of something that, personally, he wouldn't be the first person I would think would be the voice of it, but once you learn what they're doing. Anyway, it's an extremely international product, and we'll talk about that in the interview. I do want to mention the Imaging Days. It's a new radio imaging conference coming our way, extremely worldwide, and for the jet setters of the world. I will be one of them. I'll be a part of it. I can't wait. It's going to be in Amsterdam. Guess how many times I've been to Amsterdam? Yeah, zero. Guess how many times I've been to Europe? Zero. So I'm making a big to-do about this one, deciding this is a great excuse to get on a plane, travel to the Netherlands, and see all of the amazing worldwide talents that I hear about and see about all the time. So very much looking forward to it. I did a post on my blog about it so far. So if you want to go click that link, you can read up about it or just go to their theimagingdays.com, their website. They're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they're everywhere. And it looks like the sponsors are piling in, the people are signing up, so it should be a pretty successful event, and I'm happy to be even a tiny bit a part of it. And yes, I will be contributing to the event, and I can't wait. That's early September. Go check out all the information. But that really leads to the fact that I have another sort of big event podcast planned, and as I keep this podcast growing and expanding, outreaching, I like to keep it as worldwide as possible. So while today I feature an extremely talented American talent, voice artist, next, of course, it could be two episodes from now, depending on when we actually get it put together, but I'm going to have a team of producers from Amsterdam, from a couple of the biggest stations in Amsterdam, and we're going to get those guys together. And that should prove to be amazing. I'm told they speak English, so that'll be key. That's one thing I'm definitely going to have to research before we dive in. I will have them vetted. No, actually, I did learn from another friend of mine in Amsterdam that they grow up and they essentially have to learn a second language from day one. And most, I guess, if not all, choose English as their second language. So if you go to the Netherlands, or at least Amsterdam, you're probably going to be pretty cool speaking English, because from what I hear, basically everyone speaks English. Probably better than I do, as has been evidenced on my podcast over the years now. Okay, so that'll be something to look forward to. I have two or three other episodes. This episode, I slotted Jeff in. I had him a little farther down my list, to be honest. I've been wanting to interview Jeff for a long time, and I had two or three other ones that have been ahead of him. They've just gotten delayed a little bit. So I'm really glad I got to get Jeff Lawrence in here. But also, I'm going to speak with Nancy Wolfson, but that one's going to, we had to delay. She's got tons of crazy stuff in her schedule going on. So that one will come deeper into the middle of the summer. And then, you know what? I better not say it. The other one would be an extremely great interview, but I haven't locked anything in yet, and it better not. So that's a great teaser. There's someone really awesome out there I hope to interview. I just can't say anything more about it. So there you go. That's my brilliance of teasing. That's enough for an intro, I would say. Let's get to it. Jeff Lawrence, we'll get a quick sample. In fact, I'm only featuring his radio imaging work here in the sample, but I have a full-length radio imaging demo from him and his TV demo. There'll be a show notes page. You'll hear multiple full-length demos from Jeff. Also, got some cool YouTube videos from Jeff, which will be made clear as to what they're all about if you listen to the interview. So anyway, you can check that out on the show notes page, RyanOnTheRadio.com. For now, the one, the only, Jeff Lawrence.
The summer of cool.
Barbecuing, just being out, trying to have fun.
It's summer.
The best way to enjoy the season. Turn on the radio and get cool.
94.5 KOOL FM.
Are NCAA basketball champions.
Heels. Got to learn to play with the big boy.
Home of the Tar Heels. News Talk 1110 WBT. We're proud to be country.
FX 1019.
Three words. Win. Free. Money. The cool cash vault is loaded with dough. Know the exact amount, and all that money is yours. The cool cash vault.
Whale music. 10 in a row starts now.
Big hits of the 60s and 70s.
92.9.
This is Alabama's source for the big names in talk radio. News Talk 1070, WAPI, Birmingham.
And there he is, one of my favorite people in the voiceover world. And to be totally honest, a guy that I've taken way too long to chat with. I'll just say, Jeff Lawrence, the one, the only Jeff Lawrence. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, how are you, Ryan? Thank you for having me on. I listen to every one of your podcasts, and every time my wife says, how come you're not on?
You know,
I said, because Ryan didn't get our check yet. His check.
Yeah, right. No, I just need the Jeff Lawrence coffee mug or something. No, you know what I want? Oh. I want a tour of your mountainous studio setup.
We have a lot of mountainous studio setups now. We've moved things around, so not only is there a studio in the home, but we have got a secondary studio in the town of Franklin, North Carolina, which is maybe got 7,000 people in it. And we put a studio in a 1951 Burlington Northern Drover caboose. So we have got a place where we can bring clients rather than have them drive up to the mountain retreat up here. They can meet us in town, and we can do all the work right from the caboose. We've got a complete Pro Tools setup right there, and it's neat. It's in a caboose, and it's very cool.
That's great. You know, before I take a step back and dive into some of your background, as I mentioned, you have the North Carolina. Where's the, remind me again, the name of the original studio you have, or your home base?
The main studio is called Autumn Hill Studios.
That's it.
And that is based on the fact that we have a horse stable up here called Autumn Hill Stables, and we figured it would be a really clever idea to call the studio the same thing
Yeah.
Because neither of us are really very sharp. So it's like Carol and I went, let's make this simple. We'll call the studio Autumn Hill, and we'll also call the stables Autumn Hill. And we've got a very small horse rescue operation up here.
That's great.
We also rescue a whole bunch of dogs. We've got 9 rescued dogs from various different places in the States. And we're just really into animals up here.
Yeah. Is that just you and your wife, or do you have a staff that, you know, an actual business that you're operating?
Yes, we have an entire staff, people that do all our bidding. The staff is me and Carol, and I got a guy named Lee, who is one of the mountain boys who lives around here. He comes up on weekends and helps out, and cool. He knows a lot about animals. He used to be a tree guy working for one of the large tree companies. So when trees fall around here, we jump on the phone, talk to Pearl, who's the local operator, and ask them to get a hold of Lee. It's really a lot like Mayberry around here. It's very...
I love it.
When we first moved here, there was no dialing telephones. This is in 1991. You could pick the phone up and talk to Pearl and ask her to call the bank for you.
So that's actually the way it was back in, like, what, the 60s?
That was in 1991, Ryan.
Right, but... That's classic. I mean, literally, that's classic.
The county here was a dry county. Macon County had been dry when we first moved here. And if you wanted hooch on the weekend, you had to go to Peaks and pick yourself up some moonshine from the Dodge Power Wagon out behind the building.
Wow.
But they, you know, things have progressed really now. You can actually buy beer here, and cool. There's a fax machine at the bank.
Ooh, wow. Now, do you have high-speed internet, or are you doing this,
We have a fractional T1 that we had actually put in here that we don't have high-speed internet. We do have an internet connection through a T1 that the local phone company put in for us, and it didn't cost a little amount of money to get that done.
No.
But we have ISDN.
Okay, I was just going to say.
We also have a secondary studio in Georgia. We have one in a town called Madison, which is just about 45 miles to the east of Atlanta, towards Augusta. And we have a secondary studio there, so when we really need high-tech stuff, we can use that one.
And am I incorrect? Don't you have some sort of a fourth setup, or is that your mobile rig?
No, that is the fourth. The fourth setup is located in an 1888 shoe store, which is a storefront. And when we have Atlanta clients come in, or anybody that comes in and flies into Atlanta, we have them come out to the studio in Madison, Georgia.
Okay.
And do a recording there. We do a lot of the Nutrisystem work is done out of there. Some of the Colonial Pen work is done from out of there. And when we have clients come in, they take the leisurely drive out to Madison, and we do the recording there. It's a little storefront. And the town of Madison was one of the very few that Sherman never burned during his march.
Yeah.
So it's kind of got a lot of history to it, and that particular shoe store had been there since 1888.
Wow.
And we were lucky enough to get it and put a whole studio in it, and it's very nice, just a really comfortable, good vibe place to go and do recording.
That's cool. So I guess, again, before I take a step back, anyone listening to this podcast probably knows who you are, and if they didn't, they recognize your voice. I mean, you're all over the place. What would you say is your wheelhouse? Just to, you know, you define yourself. What is your wheelhouse read, or your wheelhouse kind of job?
They're really, you know, it's hard to say, because pretty much I'll go ahead and do whatever the project calls for. But I am a lot better at a read that is just kind of straight, kind of conversational with a little bit of power to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would call myself a really great high energy read. And I'm not a growler. There are some really good growlers out there, and I just can't do it with any kind of conviction. So I think probably the best read for me is a happy, fun read, up-tempo. I think I'm really good with classic hits. I know I'm pretty good with country.
Oh, yeah.
I do like a lot of the new genre of news talk. I'm doing a lot of that these days. So I think for radio imaging, that, you know, that's pretty much my wheelhouse. And the other thing is that I'm really comfortable doing a good, solid sale read like Nutrisystem or Hyundai or Wendy's or Colonial Pen, and a lot of those just, you know, that just happened to fall in my lap, and I just got real comfortable doing those.
So take us back, and again, I don't want to waste a lot of time, because there's so much cool stuff to talk about in the present, but What would you say got yourself started in making money off of your voice? What was the first, you know,
Production director for Cox in Tampa Bay.
Okay.
I'd always liked doing the production end of it. I can't ever say that I was ever a really great jock, although there's some air checks floating around, and I'll listen to them and go, you know, that was really fun then. But I don't think I was what you call a real great disc jockey. But I really did like doing the production angle of it, and I really liked the gear and the mics and the processors and the multi-tracks and the Scullies and the 2-inch tapes and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I really got into doing that. And eventually, when I just decided I didn't really like being on the air that much, I started doing a lot more production and got jobs doing productions as production director, creative director. And I eventually got to working for Cox Broadcasting in Tampa. And at that point, I started getting a lot of requests from clients wanting to know, could I do their commercials for them?
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I know, I'm looking at the balance sheet and I'm going, let me see here. I'm making more money doing the commercials on the side than I am working for the radio station. I could do this. And I looked at my wife and I went, you know what? Let's do this. Let's try it. Worst thing that could happen is I'll end up having to, you know, go to the poorhouse and get bankrupt and, you know, live under a bridge and eat hot dogs.
Yeah, and that might not be so bad. Yeah.
Well, some days it seems like a great way to go. But eventually we looked at the balance sheet and it went, you know what? Doing these outside things, the gravy work started really paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point I went, this is something we could actually do and make a living at. And I was able to take a lot of my contacts that I met during the previous 17 years in radio and call them into action, and they were actually able to start giving me business, and I had enough business to actually leave the job and move up here to North Carolina in the mountains, and that's pretty much how it started, and that was in 91.
I was actually just going to say, all right, so that was 91, and that makes sense, because that's when you had Pearl. Is that her name, Pearl?
Pearl was the operator.
Yeah, right, so that's when you had
she
the
was
Pearl
also,
days.
Pearl was also the postmistress at the post office.
So you know what it sounds
nobody
like?
Nobody knew how I made a living. When we moved up here, I had hair going down to my back. Everybody up here had no clue what I did to make a living with. But Pearl saw that there were checks coming in the mailbox. And Pearl would call me on the phone about twice a week and go, Jeff, there's a check for you.
And I was going
to
say.
And I'd go driving down to the post office and pick the check up and, you know, it kept the lights on in those days. It was really a lot of fun, very simple way to live.
And I have to assume that you watched, maybe even liked the show Northern Exposure.
I was always fascinated by that.
Yeah. And so I have to assume there's some parallels.
Very much, it's kind of like a Southern Northern Exposure.
Yeah. Okay. Southern Exposure. Yeah. So there's probably some parallels there. Well, that's great. So let's go from there right into this topic that comes up sometimes on boards and people discuss it, and the whole idea that in order to have a real successful career, you know, you need to be in one of the coast cities. You got L.A. or New York. If you really want to hit it big, you got to be L.A. or New York. And that gets talked about from all sides, because I have friends like you and others who are in Dallas or where you are or other places that have monstrous careers doing big work, and they don't need to be in L.A. or New York. You've obviously made it work out there. I'm curious if you have tips or if you have just some thoughts on what a talent can do to make their career work and not be in the LAs or New Yorks of the world.
Well, I think it's a misconception, first of all, that LA and New York are really not the hub of successful advertising anymore. And I think if you talk to anybody, especially in the creative end of it or the production end of it, that ends up at a New York or an LA radio station or TV station, They after about 3 weeks or so, they shake their heads and go, what is the big deal? These people mm-hmm. are nowhere near as good as they were in Toledo or in Binghamton.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the medium and smaller markets seem to be the ones that have the real base for creativity. And really, New York and L.A., the only thing they offer is larger paydays. And you need to have that kind of payday if you're going to live in a place like New York or Los Angeles. So what you do is you find a place that you really want to live, because technology is our friend in this business now. I can get a commercial for Buick, for Israel, today, and have it on the air in 15 minutes in Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
if you use technology to your full advantage, you don't have to be in a New York or Los Angeles anymore. Those days are over with. And you can still get a pretty good payday working with ad agencies in Dallas, in Phoenix, in Miami, in Shreveport, in Nashville. Nashville's turned out to be a terrific advertising community there. It's unbelievable.
And
the money is really pretty good. So you pretty much what you need to do is figure out a place you really like to live, put some roots, maybe have a family, enjoy life a little bit, make the quality of life yours, then go after the money because it's out there. You can get it. You just have to find it, and it will come to you. And it really is there's nothing that makes living in L.A. or Los Angeles or New York any better than anywhere else. It really doesn't make any difference. I don't think ad agencies look at that and go, he lives in Los Angeles. He must be good.
So to kind of go on that, I mean, you have a pretty sizable, you know, roster of clients that you deal with regularly. But, you know, are you a big agent guy? Do you have a lot of agents? I know of at least one you have for radio imaging. You're with CESD, I believe,
Is
that true?
Nate is one of the he's one of the guys that gets it. And for a lot of years, I talked to a lot of agents that were interested, and the one in particular really kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because basically what they wanted was they wanted my client list. They wanted all that legwork that I did in 25 years building up friendships and shaking hands and kissing babies, and they wanted the client list. And I said, why should I give this to you? I tell you what, you know, instead of you taking 20% of my client list, how about this? I'll give you 40% of any new business that you bring me. Mm-hmm. And they went, we don't do business like that. Well, you know, I don't understand that. if you're going to be out there shaking the cages for me and you're going to bring me new business, let me give you 40% of it, because then you've earned it. But if I give you this sheet that's got all of my clients on it, and you go in there and remake deals and change things that I've already put together and expect me to pay you a commission on it, I don't understand why I should do that. CESD doesn't work like that. That particular agency is one that they work on, if we get you a new station, we would appreciate you letting us know when one of your existing stations comes up for renewal and let us negotiate that for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as far as other agents go, I have one other agent that negotiates deals for me for retail work, and I have an entertainment lawyer in Atlanta that does most of the paperwork, because I'm not real sharp.
So out of all of your business, what percentage would you say you have gone out and you know, acquired yourself?
The business that I have today, I'd say 75 to 80% I probably got myself.
That's great.
But that remaining 25%, the remaining 20% or so, that's where the real money is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a bad negotiator. I would much rather get the job and do it for a small amount of money, and just to get my foot in the door.
You gave me some advice a long time ago, which I've always kept in the back of my mind. At times I've ignored it, but a lot of times I think about it and heed it. Anyway, you kind of told me, and I'll sort of sum up what you said, but, you know, try not to turn down work unless you're being, you know, completely insulted, but try not to turn down work because any work is an opportunity to audition for more work. In other words, if you get an ad and it plays in this market, well, then a guy who's going to hire you for this market might hear that, and that's the reason they hire you. So the point...
That's exactly right, man. You are so right.
Well, you are so right. Those are your words.
Well, of course, but I probably stole it from somebody. I'm sure I did. But the deal is that I could not buy airtime on any radio station to showcase my demo. I couldn't afford it. So if I get a low offer from a radio station to do imaging for them, and it's especially if it's in a key market,
mm-hmm.
Like a Dallas or a Las Vegas or a San Diego or a Seattle, something like that, I'll give you a really good deal, because there's people that come and go from those towns that listen to those radio stations, and I have gotten a lot of work. I got a lot of work off KSCS because people were coming into town to do jingles at TM, and they'd listen to the local radio stations, and they'd hear KSCS, and they would somehow find out who it was that did the imaging for them, And I ended up getting a lot of work for that.
You know what it was? It was that imaging director for the last part
of it. Well, that's all of it. Yeah, it was all the way it was presented. It wasn't the fish. Yeah. It was the fish on the plate.
Right, right. That's great. You know, I didn't bring it up yet, but you and I did work together, KSCS, for a time. KSCS went through a whole lot of changes over the years. They went flying through voice talents and program directors, but you were definitely one of the good ones there. In fact, I had Sip on recently. You know, Joe Sip, he was...
What a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Cipriano is one of the all-time nicest guys. And, you know, there's really a bunch of guys that do what we do that are really just nice, fun people to deal with. And that's, I guess if there's any other piece of advice I can think to give to anybody, is to be fun to work with, be easy to work with, be a problem solver, be someone they don't have to babysit. Don't be a pain in the butt.
I was going to say, when I got to Dallas, you know, I came from an extremely tiny market, although I had the luxury of having Dave Fox as the voice I would use before that. So I was used to working with, you know, I had great talent I got to produce. But when I came to Dallas and it was like, all right, you know, here's your studio. It's 8 times the size of anything you've ever been used to. And here's your talent. And it was you and Sip. And I'm like, wow, you know, this really is the big time. But then it was like, man, these guys are just nice guys. And I remember one time I called you, and I think it must have been Carol, I'm assuming. And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Jeff's out in the stables. Let me go see if I can grab him. You know, Ryan needs some voice work. Oh, okay, no problem. Hold on, Ryan, what do you need? Let's do this. And I'm like, wow, you know, all right.
Well, you know, the thing is, like I was saying, it's quality of life. It has very little to do with the amount of the bag of money. It's how much can you do with the bag of money that you got.
Right.
And if it's a small bag of money, then find a place where you can live well with a small bag of money. But, you know, I got a job doing mornings in Miami, and I thought I was going to be a millionaire because they offered me money that I had absolutely no idea I could ever make, ever, in the radio business. I couldn't believe it. This is in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was a boatload of money. And I went down to live in Miami, and I didn't have 20 cents in my pocket at any given time. I was always broke.
Yeah, yeah.
But it had to do with how much the cost of living is, no matter where you happen to be. So we took and found a town. The actual city that we're living in has 1,015 people in it. And they don't look at you and go, how much money do you have? They look at you and go, what kind of person are you? You're a good guy or not?
Mm-hmm.
And they based their lives on that. And I thought that was fascinating. I loved it.
Well, they probably thought you were a heroin dealer for the first while. Because they didn't know.
They
what the
thought
heck
they had no clue what I did. Because I had hair that went down to my butt. And I'd walk into the feed store to buy horse feed or hay. And this was a typical feed store with all these guys all sitting around in overalls on upside down nail kegs. And you walked into the feed store and every face in that place went looking at the door. And they clammed up a split second I walked in. Because it's like, what's he want? Where is he? Hey, hippie. They started calling me hippie.
I was going to say, what's that movie? Easy Rider? Was it a very, very similar?
You know what? They filmed Deliverance just down the road here.
Oh, I was going to bring that one up too, but I didn't want to offend you or your town. But yeah, I assume Deliverance.
But Deliverance was filmed just down the road here. And they make a big deal out of it. But the bottom line is that, like we were talking about before, it has very little to do with the amount of money you make. Mm-hmm. It has to do with what you can do with what you have. Charlie Van Dyke told me something 1 year ago, and I was talking with him because I was in one of those funks. Everybody gets in one of those funks, and I do too.
Sure.
Every so often you go, you know, I want to buy a hot dog cart and hook it up to the truck and just go to some cheap carnival someplace and sell hot dogs. I don't want to do this anymore. And because you keep thinking like you're chasing after all this money and you have to have all this stuff. And Charlie Van Dyke said, you know, you get to be a certain age, you have to reevaluate your assessment of what enough is. And it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's not such a bad idea. So when you get to a point where you think you're just never going to be able to quit, you have to figure out what your idea of enough is and be happy with that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You don't happen to watch the TV show Louie, do you?
We don't have TV up here, Ryan.
Oh, of course not. Why? Well, then
we really don't. There's no television here at all. In fact, during the summer, when the trees have leaves on them, you can't get satellite television here.
Do you have satellite though, at least for the rest of the year, or do you not even bother?
During the winter, we can get four channels, and the rest of the time it's Netflix.
Wow!
That's it.
Man, I mean, that's great. It's
horrible.
We just
saw a movie called Forrest Gump the other day. It's a great movie. You should see it sometime.
No, I'll try and catch it. I'll try and catch it. I mean, maybe it'll come to a theater here in Dallas sometime, and I'll see it. Yeah, that's awesome. Let me shift gears here. It's really fun chatting with you. It's bringing back memories of conversations we had way back when. But I wanted to kind of, I don't really know how to broach this, but I wanted your take on it. You know, you're definitely one of the big pipes voices, you know, definitely one of the big, you know, manly voices, and styles go all over the place these days. Have you found that your style has ever been a hindrance to your success in any way, shape, or form?
I don't know, because I don't think anybody has told me.
Nobody will say, yeah.
Well, you know, and it isn't, I don't think I've got what you call a manly voice. In fact, there was a national commercial that I got fired from probably 3 years ago because they said I sounded effeminate.
Was that right?
And, well, I didn't understand that, but I don't know if that's true, then, you know, I still didn't understand why they even said that or why that would make any difference. I don't think I've got what you call a big voice. I think what I've got is a timbrous voice.
Mm-hmm.
It has resonance to it.
Certainly.
But it is not necessarily a low one. There's guys that I know, Chuck Matthews in Akron is a guy.
Yeah.
Rick Hutter Rick is in Tucson. These two guys have got huge voices. I mean, they've got big, big, big balls, and they can do that big, loud, growly big reed. I don't think I'm in the same league with those guys. What I am is a guy who knows how to read to sell. In fact, I teach a course as an adjunct at a local university that will actually, it's called Reading to Sell. There's a lot of guys in this business that have got really, really good voices but can't read.
Yeah, absolutely.
And moreover, it's the ability to take a script and actually sell it like it's your own instead of sounding like you're reading it.
Sure, certainly. So, okay, let's go there then. That's obviously a huge issue in the voiceover world in all facets because, you know, sometimes you're reading and you literally need to sound, you need to be announcer, but a lot of times you need to act. Anyway, I bring this up a lot and the answer's pretty obvious. You know, what's more important, vocal quality or your ability to, you know, bring the words to life? How do you go about being better at the bringing the words to life versus just simply having the good voice, being the good voice guy?
The voice guy, I think, in me tells me that what I need to do is know the product well enough to be able to sell it if I didn't have the script in front of me.
Okay.
And you know, you get scripts, you get audition scripts all the time, but I like to try to get to know the product so that I kind of think I know what I'm talking about. And people who especially are going to buy a product that are interested in the product know whether or not the guy on the television that's selling it knows anything about it or not.
Yeah.
So it really makes a lot more difference in terms of how successful or how non-successful you're going to be. It has a lot less to do with the quality of the voice as it does being able to interpret what's on the paper or what's on the screen and actually and sell it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you already brought up the fact that I think you said you essentially have one agent for retail. I'm wondering how many auditions do you actually get? And first we'll start there. Like how many auditions come your way?
I get probably 3 or 4 auditions a day.
Okay.
And I think if I do 30 auditions, I might get one job.
So
it's hard to say because people, when they send auditions out, they have a preconceived idea as to what the thing is supposed to sound like.
Sure.
And if your audition happens to hit that particular core that they were looking for, then you'll get the job. Very rarely is an audition going to sway their idea originally of what they were looking for to begin with.
So,
I did an audition for, it was for Pet Boys. And I thought for sure I had it. I thought I nailed it because it really, to me, it hit home. It was for tires and batteries. And I thought I just did exactly what the guy wanted. And it was not even close.
Yeah.
So you never know. Really, any audition you take, all you're doing is rolling your dice, hoping that what it is that you're doing is what they originally were looking for.
So it sounds like you've already given me my answer, but I'm looking for sort of your theory on audition techniques or strategy. But it seems like it's better to be you, and if they want you, they'll buy you. Don't try and be something you're not. I mean, I've had that said before as well, but is that kind of the ballpark you live in, or should you adjust yourself?
Yeah, I'd say that's if anything summed it up, that's probably it. It makes a lot more sense to be, and it's really the only way you can be credible is to be you. And that has to do with radio imaging. That's more or less why I do classic hits, country, news talk, and some AC. I do the AC Pure format for Westwood One. That's kind of the world I live in. If I tried to do a John Wells or a Charlie Van Dyke, mm-hmm. or, you know, if I tried to do somebody else, it wouldn't have any credibility, it wouldn't sound real, and they wouldn't buy it. So it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to try to be somebody else, unless you're a character voice actor. And a lot of those guys are really good at that because that's what they specialize in. I can't do that.
Is audition techniques, just one more on this, is there anything else that you do to sort of break down a script, or when you get something in and you know you got to knock it out pretty quick, you can't really go out and do a whole lot of market research, although you like to learn about your product, but what else do you do to put out the best audition possible?
I always give three takes of everything.
Okay.
With just a little different spin on it. And especially if it's something, if it comes up where there is a word or two or a phrase or a city's name or something like that that I don't know, especially if it's a city's name that I don't know, instead of asking the client, call them up and yeah. saying, can you give me the pronunciation of Baton Rouge? I'll call up somebody down there like the sheriff's department or a car dealer or a bank and say, excuse me, we're thinking about moving down there. How do you say the name of your city properly?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll always give it to me the way the locals would do it.
Sure.
So when I get on my audition and I'm doing something for a car dealer or a bank in Baton Rouge, I can say that instead of doing it Baton Rouge.
Right.
If you say it the way the locals say it, you have a better shot at getting the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's great. Let me touch on coaching real fast. I don't know if you've had time or if you've been ventured into this realm, but do you acquire coaching for yourself ever?
I have a guy that coaches me named Tommy Kramer.
Okay.
Who's yeah. probably one of the best guys. He's one of the best ears in this whole business. He is unbelievable. And he also has no qualms about telling me, that sucked.
Yeah.
And coming from him, I got enough respect for him that when he says it sucks, it sucks. And I got to fix it and do it differently. And if I do it the way he says to do it, most of the time it's better. But he's the one guy so far that I have gotten enough feedback from that's been constructive, that I'm really, really pleased to have an association with him. And it's not on a regular basis and certainly not frequently enough, but he and I did some work for Cliff in Dallas when we were doing news talk, and he literally let me go and just go off and do stuff, and they were able to make a lot of really, really good promos out of the thing. I don't know how they did it, but he knew what he wanted. When he asked for stuff, I listened to it, and he's one of the few really, really good coaches that I've dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of them out there, especially with retail voice coaches and vocal coaches, and there's a lot of really good ones out there. I just gratefully haven't had a whole lot of time to venture into that. Business has been pretty darn good.
Yeah, we were talking before this. You say business has been great, and that's really great to hear. I'm curious, since you do have so much work, and I would imagine there's times where you don't have the time to go and find other realms, but is there another realm of the voiceover world that you have not broken into that you really would love to break into?
Boy, that's a good one.
I'm pretty good. Know. I'm good at this. I'm good at this, Jeff.
You are. That's a really good one. I really don't know. The weirdest thing I think I ever did was working for a group of realtors in Arizona.
Were you talking house?
I was a talking house.
Yeah, that's cool.
But the fun thing was is they didn't want to just have the typical real estate read. They wanted it to sound, because people are listening to these things on their car radios.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted this thing to sound professionally done so that it would be compelling enough that people would sit in front of the house and actually listen to it, instead of, you know, a realtor going, "This is the house at 1444 123rd Street." You know, they wanted it to be produced and sound really slick. So we did a bunch of them. The guy loved it. He says, "How much is this going to cost?" And I went,
I don't know.
You know, I've never been a talking house before. I got no clue. So we arrived at some nebulous figure that turned out to be 0.5% of the closing cost of the house.
Huh.
And okay. I'm going, okay, that's good. 0.5%. Well, they didn't use Talking House, the system, for anything except the really big high-end ones, and they didn't want to have this big production instead of, you know, for a $30,000 house. They were selling $4 million homes.
Mm-hmm.
So for a three-minute little piece of practically nothing that I just voiced, I think we were getting checks for like $4,200.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
And it's like, wow, this is great. They ended up deciding that that was too expensive, and they pulled the plug on that idea. But I thought that was pretty cool.
It's cool while it lasted. Tell me something that took you way out of your comfort zone, an actual job, you know, something you were hired to do, and then, wow, it was like, oh, boy, that, you know, that for whatever reason, that was not you. But you still did it.
The hardest thing I've ever done was for the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, based in Columbus, Ohio. I did an entire set of learning, what are they called, modules? It was e-learning.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agreed to do it for a certain amount of money. They said, oh, it's only four modules. There's the introduction, and there's two modules in the middle, and then there's a wrap-up module at the end. I said, well, that's fine. That sounds, you know, that can't, how bad can that be? Fairly simple. Plus, it got my foot in the door with Wendy's a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all right. Well, I'll do that. So we agreed to it. And they started sending the copy. And it was, each module was 117 pages. Minimum. And really, really dry. And believe me, the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is a wonderful organization. They really do some terrific stuff. But I am not good at doing e-learning. It was so hard and so long. It
yeah.
took a week or two to get it done, or more than that. It was something I don't think I ever want to do again. Not because I felt good doing it. It's a great organization,
mm-hmm.
but it was way too much work.
Now, a similar yet completely different animal would be audiobooks. I have a huge respect for the real good ones. In that,
me too.
I think Scott Brick, right, is kind of like the main name, and I've listened to a few, but huge respect. Anyway, have you ever dove into that? Is that something you think you could be good at?
Never.
Never.
Never did it.
Yeah.
Never did it. I don't think I have the ability. My mom, and this is back in the very early 60s in L.A. when I grew up in Los Angeles.
Actually, I didn't know
my
that.
Mother
you grew up
worked,
in L.A.? What town?
L.A., Los Angeles, I lived in Claremont, Pomona, Ontario. We moved around a little bit, but for the most part. And Laguna Beach is my favorite. I lived in Laguna for a while.
Great. I grew up in El Segundo. So anyway, continue.
Oh, my son lives in El Segundo.
Oh, really? Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a producer for South Park for a while, and now he works for Jib Jab.
Oh, no way.
And he had a place in El Segundo just until recently he moved to Culver City.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, sorry.
And El Segundo is like, how does this little town, all of a sudden you're in the middle of Los Angeles. There's the airport is all over the place. Sepulveda is all over the place.
Yeah.
traffic is everywhere, and then all of a sudden, here's El Segundo. It's like this little island in the middle of the city.
It's you know, a lot of location stuff is done there because, you know, all the studios don't want to go very far. If they, you know, if they want to do local shooting, they'll shoot in El Segundo because it looks like a town out of Ohio.
Yeah, and in about 1960.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, an Ohio town from 1963. Right, exactly.
Anyway, back on audiobooks. Yes. My mom read for Recording for the Blind. And she would go into the little studios that they had there in Claremont. And I would go with her because I obviously was a little kid. So I had to go and just sit there. And it was boring. It was dry. It was impossible. I don't think I could do justice to anybody else's book. That's why the audiobooks that I hear that are actually read by the author,
ooh,
those are the ones that really get to me. I love those because those folks know what they're talking about.
Yeah, but they can also be real bad. I mean, you know, sometimes books read by the author can be a big mistake.
They don't know how to read.
Right.
And that goes all the way back to, you know, learning how to read to sell has to do with you got to sell your own product as well.
Yeah.
And no matter how much you know about the actual subject or the product, if you can't be compelling and hold people, yeah, you lost them after the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Let's see here. I wanted to get onto the technology side because I know you're a pretty hooked up guy. I mean, even though you live in you know, Deliverance, circa 1948, still
rural mountainous North Carolina.
Yeah, you're very connected and you know your way around tech. And I mean, you have four studios you're running, for gosh sakes. But what are some of your, you know what? Let me start here because I don't want to forget to cover it. Source Connect Now, big topic recently. You know, a lot of people are talking about it. It's still in beta. In fact, as we were sitting here, I got an email about their beta pricing, by the way.
They have got a new beta. It's beta 4 out now.
Beta 4. I just got the email about it. Anyway, explain Source Connect Now, your thoughts on it, and have you used it professionally yet? And if so, how has it worked for you? And just give me the rundown on that.
Well, you know, I'm far from an expert on Source Connect Now. I'm one of the early adapters of Source Connect, as is Sip.
Certainly.
He's a real proponent of Source Connect. ISDN is a technology that is early 70s, and most telcos are not even servicing them anymore. They will not let us have an ISDN any longer here because we were the only people in this whole part of the state that had ISDN, and they had to have a guy from Raleigh basically live here, and they paid him a full-time salary just to be sure that our ISDN stayed on because they had to. Mm-hmm. So the phone company finally turned around and said, you know, we got to pull ISDN out of here. And that was sort of how we were able to get our T1 line put in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, look, if you're going to take that out, you got to give me this. And I went to the Utilities Commission and all that. That said, I started using Source Connect because they will allow you to bridge with an ISDN guy in another part of the country. So if I have to do still an ISDN session, I get on Source Connect, connect with a company called Out of Here, which is in Los Angeles. He connects me via ISDN to studios around the country. So if I have to do an ISDN session, I can still do it on Source Connect. He connects me to ISDN. Then the studio that's doing ISDN, wherever they happen to be, connects to him, and I can pretty much do it from anywhere. Source Connect Now does the same thing, except it doesn't require any proprietary software in terms of what you have to download or purchase. And what it allows me to do is if I want to do a session with you, I can send you an email with a link that you click that will automatically connect you to me. You don't have to download anything. The only thing you have to have is Google Chrome. If you're running Google Chrome, you automatically and already have the codec that they use. Boy, am I throwing out some tech terms here. But
Now, most people Source listening Connect, are going to understand.
Source Connect now uses a codec called Opus, which is the basis for Google Chrome's sound connectivity. And I can literally take anybody that has an email address that's running Google Chrome, I can send you an email with a link on it. You click the link, and you're connected with complete full fidelity to me.
Now, get a little bit into the way that Source Connect Now works, though, for the maybe even for more of the layman voice talent. But I got Google Chrome over here. I actually see it on your website. I see that you have the embed code in your website, so
right.
The information is there. So anyway, your audio, which is at 128K mono, it's a high quality mono track.
Yeah, it's a 48 128K feed.
Thank you.
Which is, you know, pretty much is it's as good, if not better, than most ISDN.
So how
and
do
if you've got a sound card and a mic and most voice people have got that sort of stuff connected to their some computer somewhere. If you have all that, you can configure it so that your sound card will work with it. And all you need to do is go to my website and click the little link, but you need to have a code, and I have to tell you what that code is, and when you do that, it sends me an email saying you want to connect to me. I hit the link and we're connected.
So coming back just a little bit, you know, again, for the super layman, which I'm included in that group when it comes to Source Connect now, I get the code, I get connected to you, I actually tested it out, I see how it works, but how do me on my end, how do I get your high quality voice? You know, where does it output? How am I recording you? You know, what happens to the audio after it comes down the internets and down the webs and it comes out of my Chrome into my computer? Is it my responsibility to know how to wire up my system to somehow record my browser? Or, you know, how's that
well,
side of
what,
work?
It will embed, I believe it'll embed into Pro Tools. Now, the way we're using it is I'm using a standalone computer to use it completely for Source Connect now, so I can use it as an ISDN codec. It's basically, my computer is my Zephyr.
I understand. Yeah, so that pops up on your board.
So when I use it, the way I would be using it is I just go ahead and connect to Source Connect now, and then I've got it here, and I can record it onto another machine if I need to. What they have done at a session just recently in Dallas is it's part of, it can be embedded right into Pro Tools. So you can just basically pick it as a plugin.
That's that other plugin. They sell it for like $25 or something. Or no, $100,
yeah, $125.
Bucks.
And it, you know, you look at the cost of a new Zephyr and it's $5,000 or $25 for the plugin.
I think I misspoke. I think it's more like $100 and something. But still, the plugin.
Is it that much? Well, I you know, again, I don't know. And they're also kind of in the middle of sort of a quandary figuring out how to price this thing to make it attractive enough, but still make them some money.
Yeah.
I think you're going to find real soon Source Connect Now is going to be probably the hot ticket for the next 5 years or so.
So it sounds like you've done sessions with Source Connect Now and your clients were happy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've done a couple with a TV station in Milwaukee, and I've done several with TV stations. Love it because they can just jump on my website, click that link, and they've got me connected. They can record direct to tape up there. They know what they've got in full fidelity, and then they're off to the races up there because a lot of TV stuff is topically oriented and has to be done like really quick.
Yeah, right. So it sounds like if you have your setup where your computer is kind of coming into a board, some sort of a board on a pot, and then records somewhere else, super easy. But if you want to do it
absolutely, or you can go ahead and I have used Source Connect Now in the back of my wife's Jeep. I did a Hyundai commercial on it. With nothing more than a Sennheiser shotgun mic and a little MicPort Pro.
And did you do it over like a 4G connection?
Yeah, it was 4G.
Yeah, and the quality doesn't
4G.
Degrade?
It has to be reasonably robust in order to do that. But
yeah.
If you have a decent 4G connection, we did the complete Hyundai session in the back of my wife's Jeep, and I saw it on TV the other night, and it's like, I did this in the back of your Jeep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is cool.
Yeah. So in the Jeff Lawrence opinion, Source Connect Now definitely worth checking out.
Absolutely, and it'll probably be nothing, but every time they come out with something a little bit better, it's going to get smoother, it's going to get less glitchy. I think a lot of the early adapters looked at it and went, nah, this is just kind of a gimmick. But the Source Connect people, Source Elements is a really sharp company, and they are going to massage this thing and polish it until it's just right. And it's going to be something we can all use that won't be stupid expensive. It'll be, you know, $100.
Let me say, since it literally just got the email here, Source Connect Now price announcement. Everyone's asking about our pricing. Source Connect Now is the most affordable and flexible IP audio system available. Anyway, all accounts will be able to connect two people at broadcast quality 128kbps-bold for free. For premium,
right.
For premium features, pricing will start as low as $8 a month with a middle tier around $24 a month. No need to purchase additional links. Guest accounts are always free. So they are really getting aggressive now.
I think they are, and they also know that they've got a product that once they get it in the mainstream and everybody wants it, that $8 a month is probably going to be where everybody lands, with certain exceptions.
But they have competition.
They do have competition. In fact, the competition, I don't know, has been able to figure out how to embed it into Pro Tools yet.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Ip Diddle, I think that's something related to their competition. George Whittam was schooling me on this a while back, and I've just never taken the time to fully wrap my head around it. But there's definitely good competition now. For what used to be, Source Connect was like the only non-ISDN option. Now there's multiple options.
And it got a little pricey. Toward the end, I think they started out, it was about $300 or $400, and then the licenses got up to about $600.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think they went so far as to bust the backs of enough people that they're kind of bitter about it.
Well, yeah, and the fact...
I'm telling you, I think Source Connect... I like Source Connect, and I still have two licenses, and I'm happy with it. But Source Connect now is going to end up being probably the de facto standard for the way we start doing full fidelity communication. I think it'll work great.
Let me ask you this. How do you get the job as the voice, and I may say it wrong, are you the voice of CBS Asia?
Yeah. I am the voice for Hawaii 5-0, for Survivor, for 48 Hours, for a handful, all the CSIs, in India, Vietnam, Hong Kong, Thailand, Singapore, the Philippines. There's a couple of other, Malaysia. I really don't know how I got that.
Let me cut you off real quick. When I think of Jeff Lawrence, especially from back in my KSCS days, the first thing I think about is how could he not be the voice of CBS Asia? That's what I think. That's what I think. Right. So how does that hook up?
How could he not do that?
How does that hook up?
You know what I think it was? I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that they would have liked to have used the guy that they use here in the States for CBS, except that the union doesn't have any jurisdiction there in Asia. So I have a feeling that it had something to do with that. But I have a talent agent based in Sweden who got me this job.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem real happy with it. This is the third or fourth year that I've signed a new deal with them. And it's pretty cool. It's a lot of fun to do.
That's awesome. I know you've been doing it a little while. I wanted to bring it up, though, because it's a fascinating job. And I love it when you get gigs that seem, you know, way out of your realm and shows your range and all that. But anyway, I'll post some YouTube links on a show notes page. It's fun stuff.
The fun thing about that is when you have to do those, and those I do on ISDN via Source Connect, they are in a time zone that is completely out of the whack of the United States.
Oh,
so they want to do online sessions at 3:15 in the morning.
Okay, I was going to ask you, 3:15, is that regular for you? Do you have to do that often?
Generally, it's once a week.
Okay.
Sometimes during times when they're coming out with new shows or there's series premieres or any number of things that are more intensive, it'll be two times a week. But generally, it's, you know, 3:15, got to be here.
Here's a dumb question, but CBS Asia, is that literally, is Les Moonves essentially in charge of that also? Or are they just sort of borrowing
actually,
the brand?
It's a company called RTL, and RTL is a global communications company.
I'm familiar.
And when they say
yep.
CBS, it's basically that they've taken CBS programming and they're running it on their RTL networks over there. The name of the network I'm doing now, there's two of them in India. It's called Prime. And every place else, it's called Extreme.
Yeah. Okay.
But they are the CBS shows that we see here. They're North American, and they want the promos done in North American ease, so they sound legit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do.
That's really cool, Jeff. I promised you I wouldn't. Before we started, you said you were about two-thirds of the way through a 500-plus read project. I know you got to get – you know how many days I've had 500 reads to do? Zero. That's how many days I've had 500 reads to do. So
I've been doing the commercials with Alex Trebek for Colonial Penn for about 5-6 years. And every time they do a new set of commercials with Alex Trebek, they have to have the tags put on the end.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I can do these in my sleep. Call 1-800-555-1212 for your free information and guide to Social Security. There's no obligation. Call 1-800-5- Anyway, I have to do 512 of them and have them delivered. That's just why there's not a whole lot of voice left this during our session, which we're doing in the afternoon. There's not much left of me this time of day.
Yeah, well, you still sound good.
I have to
good.
Have them all finished up and done by Friday.
What is your fit? Your out of everything you do regularly, it might be one station or one type of one format, one genre, or one thing. What is your favorite thing? Your favorite thing to do? You're like, damn, I'm gonna kill this again.
I try to take everyone and open up a new box every time. It's a new. You know, when the email comes in and it's something new, I just tackle it with 100% because it's the only way to do it. There are some that you get and you go, oh, crap.
Right.
But almost every one of them, well, you know, you open them up and go, oh, this is pretty good. This is fun. This is a lot of fun. I think some of my favorite stuff is work that I'm doing for the Canadian radio stations. They, for some reason, still have a budget to have a creative writing arm of their radio stations. They have copywriters.
Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference in the kind of stuff that you're getting from them, because there's a one person whose whole job is to do nothing but come up with clever ideas and clever liners and that sort of thing. And when stuff comes in from the Canadian clients, I always go, well, this is going to be fun because it's different and it's not cookie cutter.
I skipped over this earlier, to be honest, and I was really curious. Ballpark for everybody, the mere mass of work you have. Now, you can kind of say in general how many stations you have, but also I'm curious your day. What time do you start going, and generally what time do you stop?
The dogs wake up at 5 o'clock. And if I have not already gotten up and come to the studio by 3 to do CBS, the dogs get us up at 5 o'clock. I make a nice, big, strong pot of coffee. Carol and I sit around and talk about the day. She takes all the stuff that we get in email-wise and groups it into a folder for the day.
Okay.
And she says, here's what you're going to do for today. Here it is. And she gives me the folder, and I come down and start hammering away at it. And that's all based on clients saying, needs to be in-house by this date.
Yeah.
So I get a folder every day that's like a Christmas present that's got all this stuff in it. And I do work for Anthony Sullivan for a lot of infomercial stuff through a company called Concepts. I've got stations in Hawaii, Oshkosh. I've got car dealers all over the country. I've got Phoenix. I'm just looking at the schedule for the last couple of days. I am also the voice of 32 different colleges for a company called IMG out of Winston-Salem, which is the company that does sports marketing. So I'm also the commercial voice of Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, University of Las Vegas, Texas Christian University, Duke, Auburn. The list goes on and on. So during football season, you never see me. I get down here at 5 o'clock and I'm not upstairs even to have a drink of water until like 7 o'clock in the evening.
Wow.
Because, you know, that's the beginning of the radio network seasons. And all I have to do, all my job is to do the sponsorships and the intros to the different shows, and the intros kickoff is an hour away. Brought to you by Geico, 15 minutes can save you 50%. You know, you do that enough and you do it in your sleep.
So some days it's a 14-hour day. And do you limit it to 5 days a week at least? Do you give yourself a weekend?
Nope, I really don't. If a TV station needs something on the weekend, I do it. If somebody calls up and needs something done, especially the TV clients, because a lot of it is news-oriented, I'll go ahead and just come on down here and do it, because what I'm selling is customer service.
Now, when's the last time you took a week off?
I still take lots of vacation time, but we have a motorhome that's got a studio in it.
So answer my question. When's the last time You took a week off from voicing anything.
Probably 3 years ago. I think 3 years ago we went up to Niagara Falls, Canada for the 4th of July.
Great.
And we actually had an actual week off.
Wow.
But I don't generally do that. I'm uncomfortable not working.
Now,
so it's, you know,
why don't I end with this then, and I don't want it to be a negative thing, but would you say you have what are known as the golden handcuffs? Are you kind of like at a point where there's so much work, you can't really get away, so it's a blessing and a curse?
It's a constant blessing, and I don't think it's a curse, but it does grab a hold of you. I think, you know, you get to the point of you're afraid to say no to anybody, because if you do, they'll find somebody else, and if they find somebody else, then they won't come back to you.
Yeah.
And then what?
There's always that mentality, certainly.
Yeah, and you get kind of, you can get wrapped up in that, and I'm in the same boat that a lot of guys are. It's like, you know, I don't want to be unemployed. I don't want people to all of a sudden find out. I don't want anyone to know that I'm fallible, that I take time off, but I do occasionally, but most of the time I'll take time off in little spurts.
Yeah.
A day here and a day there, an hour here. I really have it made, because if it's time to take a break, I'll take a break, go upstairs, make some coffee, pat on the dogs, talk to my wife, breathe some fresh air, and come back on down and keep on doing it.
Yeah. Now, that's great. Your attitude will be infectious to people that listen. I love to hear about your world. Your success is amazing. All the best to you. So, Jeff, I will thank you so much for being on the podcast, and I look forward to chatting with you and learning from you again, man. Thank you.
Brian, you're too kind. I really appreciate it. Anybody who wants to call or email me, have any questions about anything, I will answer it, and I'll open doors if I can and tell you what you need to know. If I can come up with any kind of great, you know, any sort of answer, I'll be more than happy to do it. So post the email address and post the phone number if you want to. I'm more than happy to help out.
Oh, you know, I mean, that's so nice of you. I wasn't going to do that. That's why I didn't end like that. I wasn't going to do that to you. I know how much you have, but that's great. I will do that. There'll be a show notes page. There'll be the podcast page. Great stuff. So anyway, thank you so much for that, Jeff. I will do that. And thank you so much for being on the podcast.
That was fun.
The producers.
All right. We'll close it out. I will take very little of your time in the outro here, except to say thank you to Jeff, the man. Great, great, great interview. And I think I already sort of slaughtered the teaser I was trying to do about upcoming episodes. So I'll simply say that I will be speaking with multiple talents together from Amsterdam, from the Netherlands. And that will be sort of a pre-hype for the Imaging Days, which will be a great conference coming up in September. But also because I like to get these big event podcasts put together, and that's what I'm just trying to do. So like I said, I will take up not too much of your time here in the outro. If you want to reach out to me, always do it anytime. RyanDreen@gmail.com. That's definitely by far the best way to get at me. You can use the contact form on my website. Oh, quick story. I realized it was broken. Somebody emailed me and said, hey man, your contact form is broken. And I realized it was only allowing you to type in 6 characters because the plugin was updated and I didn't know and I didn't do it and I'm a dork. And so now it's fixed. So if you'd like to use the contact form and it wasn't working before, it would have allowed you to basically write me a 4-letter word and 2 exclamation marks. That's what it would have done a week ago. Now you can write me piles and piles of exclamation marks and 4-letter words if you'd like. So, okay, that'll do it. Thanks so much. Glad you listened, and I will talk to you next time. Bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.